So I'm Shanti. Good morning. Welcome to everyone. A special welcome to those who are young in body, as mentioned this morning. So today's session is a workshop on Bubba's healing and transformative power. So Bubba's healing and transformative power. And the session will be presented by Sister Gopi from the UK, and she's been in Gyan for over 35 years, though she doesn't look 35. But she has done a lot of service, particularly in developing the International Youth Forum, which is a great support for young VKs around the world on their spiritual journey. She's also done particularly a lot of service for youth with governments and outside organisations as Bubba's instrument. So she'll present this morning's workshop and I'll hand over to her.
Om Shanti. Good morning. How are you this morning? Are you okay? So, can you read this behind me? It says, you should sit in meditation for 20 minutes a day unless you're too busy. Then you should sit for an hour. Okay. I think one of the most common complaints that I've been hearing from Brahmins in the last few years has been, we're not having enough yoga. We want more yoga, we're not having enough yoga. And this particular workshop, seminar, session, whatever you want to call it, was actually born from a request by some new students when I was in Greece. And one morning they just said to us, can you please tell us about the definition of yoga and the definition of sin? And I thought, okay, let's do a session called Yoga and Sin. And then when I arrived in Madhuban, and I have to say it was quite revealing for me, because for a number of years in Gyan, I've been exploring and experimenting with the subject of soul consciousness and yoga. And I have collected a series of muralis all on the different entry points into yoga and remembrance. And so I thought, okay, now's my chance to put everything together in an essenceful way and present it. Because so many of Bubba's children now coming will may not have the chance to read the Avyakta Muralis beginning from 1969 to present day. So it was a very revealing insight for me also when I was putting it together, because it made me check and examine my own, you know, in English they say backyard, my own garden, and just see the areas that were perhaps weak, the areas that are strong, that need to be developed. And I think this kind of a reality check is very useful for us, especially when we get onto the field of service very quickly when we come to Bubba. And when we get onto the field of service very quickly, the energy of action sustains us, the energy of a pure environment sustains us, the energy of the relationship of the Father sustains us, right? And yet along the way, I have to create my own power and strength. I remember Avyakta Bapdada saying that there will come a time when Bubba won't come down to meet you, you will have to go up to meet Bubba. So do you have enough strength to be able to take yourself to Bubba? Right now Bubba's coming to us, right? He's still coming in the corporeal form. He's still coming down to the children. So when I arrived in Madhuban, and I was driving up the mountain with Marcelo, and Marcelo goes, Sister Gopi, will you do a session? And I said, yes, yoga and sin. And he said, oh, little bit of a heavy topic for people. So I said, okay, call it God's healing and transformative power. So we changed the title to make it sound nice. But I am going to tackle the subject of yoga and sin. And they have a very deep connection. And it'll manifest as we move further in the session. Now, I just want to say that if you have any questions during the course of this session, write them down. We'll have some space at the end for some Q&A. Is that okay? Yeah? Okay, so first, what I'd like to do, if this works, is begin with a reality check. Okay? So I'd like us to spend a few moments in silence and just think about or recollect a significant moment with Baba. It could be the first time you had a powerful yoga experience, any other time, but a significant, an experience in yoga that stands out for you. So just spend a few moments, go back to the television screen of your mind. Which moment with Baba stands out for you? What did you feel? Remember that moment. And let yourself relive it. Next, if you've got notebooks and pens, you're going to need them now. I'd like you to write a few sentences about how this particular experience shaped your life. So we know when we come to Baba, we come as we are. And Baba starts injecting us with a whole series of experiences. So this particular experience that was memorable for you, in what way has it shaped your life or influenced your life? You can spend a couple of minutes just doing some writing, automatic writing. Okay, and the last question. Describe your relationship with Baba metaphorically. So as a metaphor, I'll capture it in an image. If you were to think of your relationship with Baba right now, what image would you give it? And instead of writing about it, I'd like you to draw it. It doesn't matter, you don't have to be a professional artist for this, so even a few scribbles is fine. So just feel your relationship with Baba and see what metaphor surfaces. Okay, everybody got a metaphor? Yes? No? Who has one? Who's comfortable with the image they have? Okay, so there's only a few. Okay. Hands are raising, is it? Okay, I'd like you to just turn around to the person next to you and just have a little chat about what you've discovered. So just share your memory, share how you feel it's shaped your life, and share your current image of your relationship with Baba. And you've got a few minutes for that. Okay. And then we'll do a bit of a feedback from that. Okay, if your partner hasn't spoken, give them a chance to speak. Okay. Can we wrap up? Thank you. Okay. So, was that difficult? Was it easy? So how would you do loving, love, light, beautiful, sorry, recognition, buzursh. Sorry? Peace. At the back? Magical. Inspiration. No more worrying. Liberation. Hey, not bad, hey? We've managed to accomplish peace, happiness, love, liberation, recognition, all in about 10 minutes. How did you do that? You know, I just, for those who just come in, I was just sharing earlier that this had come out of a request from some new students when I was in Greece. And I'd taken the whole collection of Murlis that I've had from Baba Avyakt Bhat Dada on all the different stages of yoga and decided to make it into an essenceful presentation. And one of the things in my own practice of yoga and meditation and remembrance that I've learned is that it's so important to change energy. Have you ever tried to meditate when you feel heavy? Does it work? No. It just doesn't work. And so there's something about changing our energies that's very, very important before we engage. And there's three things in these questions, because they're not just random questions, they're designed quite purposefully to activate something inside. You know, many times a lot of us suffer from a lot of distraction, or we get easily distracted by things, and we might be feeling something, thinking something else, doing something else, and there's an experience of a kind of a conflict of energies inside. Have you experienced that? I have, more than once. So, when we sit for yoga, or we try and remember Baba in that kind of a condition, we don't go anywhere. And one of the first things that's required is a little bit of alignment. And so the thing about these three questions is they were tackling the three faculties within the soul. What was the first question tackling? Where was the first question taking you? Into your memories, right? Your memories, and you would have remembered something that you've done with Baba, been with Baba, and experienced some scars. It was taking you into your memory bank. What about the second question? Sorry? The second question's for the mind? The second question was for your intellect. It was meaning-making. We're going in a direction towards the memory of Baba and we're making meaning out of that. You're starting to integrate the memory of that experience with your life right now. Yeah, it's like bridging, connecting, because that's the job of the intellect. And the last question was, no prizes for guessing, The mind. Right? The mind sees and feels. It's also the function that generates thoughts, but primarily when you're exercising your mind, you're capturing your feeling and giving it an image, because it's a very, very strong projector screen. And the moment we just did an activity by focusing on the memory of Baba, making meaning of it, giving shape to it, suddenly your feelings changed. You started to feel lighter, you started to feel more peaceful, love awakened. And it was so easy. It took 7 minutes, if not less, right? Now what I'd like to do before we go on is I'd just like to hear a few metaphors, your images. So maybe two or three people, if you could just come to the front quickly, pick up a mic, this mic here, and just share your image of your relationship with Baba. Any volunteers? Or are the chairs really comfortable? And if we have two more, if you can just come and be ready. Come, Kutai. Yep.
Om Shanti. So this is the image, you maybe see it, the heart. And inside there is the star. And it was really like intuitive drawing, but then I made it into words like that it's a spiritual love, like loving relationship with Baba. Om Shanti.
So what was your image? A heart with a star in it. Okay, thank you. Spiritual love. Thank you. Anyone else burning to share, you're more than welcome to come up.
Om Shanti. My image is puzzle parts. We are together with Baba, strong magnet puzzle, like a strong.
Yes. Your image is like a puzzle.
Puzzle, yeah.
Like a jigsaw puzzle, you mean?
Yeah.
And that it's held together?
Yes.
By a magnet.
Eksik parça nasıl söyleniyor Neşe abla? Missing.
It's a jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah.
Oh.
My missing part.
A missing
part.
You mean Baba's the missing piece of the puzzle? Is that right? Or am I not getting this?
My missing.
You're missing.
Yes, I have some missing.
You have a few missing pieces.
Yes, I remember Baba and I pieces.
Ah, so there's a few missing pieces in the jigsaw puzzle,
yeah.
And when you remember Baba, yeah. The pieces are there. Oh, so he fills the gaps. He's a gap filler then.
Yeah.
He fills the gaps. Oh, how interesting. Very nice. Thank you.
I don't know if there's a point in showing it's so tiny, but it's also a heart. And then there's like hands that emerged after that, like as in Baba holding my heart and supporting it, and then like an arrow going through the heart, which is like showing that he's the conqueror of my heart. And that's it.
So the conqueror of your heart.
Yeah.
An arrow going through your heart and hands coming out of the heart.
Coming around the heart, so he's like protecting my heart and supporting it and healing it.
Thank you. Okay. Anybody else who's had an image that's not a heart? Yes. And anyone else from the brother's side who'd like to? I'm sure you must have some interesting metaphors.
So I had this image of, you know, when you work in the construction site, you have this helmet with a light on top of it. So, and you, if you want to see anything, you need that light before you do anything. So Baba was that light. So it's like a guiding. So Baba is the guide and he's showing me the way through that.
So you're wearing a construction helmet
kind of, yeah.
With a light, Baba's light on it. That's wonderful.
Just for something different, the first image that came in my mind was a cup of tea. And I like that because to me it means friendship, companionship, warmth, openness, love, homeliness. It's relaxed and that's how I'm feeling with Baba right now.
Isn't that great? Baba has a cup of tea. Like, we know that Baba can take on as many forms as you want, but a cup of tea, that's really something.
So my image is kangaroo.
Your image is a?
Kangaroo.
Is it kangaroo?
Kangaroo, and I'm in the...
You're
pocket.
In the pouch?
Yes.
Of a kangaroo! Oh, wow! I hope Baba's listening, yeah.
And from fetus, I grow.
So you're in the pouch, and you're like a little fetus growing.
Yes.
In, oh. Now Baba's a kangaroo, isn't that brilliant? Yes. And you're in the pouch.
So Baba is watching me all the time.
So Baba's watching you and looking after you all the time. Wow. Okay. Some serious variety here, isn't there?
Next time she'll speak in English, but this time with translation.
Yeah.
Fragrance of flower. So it's a breeze with fragrance of flower. That's the image she had. I'm trying to hold it in. It's hard to open, but this breeze comes in and then I can't help not open. I try to remain in this comfort zone, but this breeze just make me open up.
Oh, so Baba's like a fragrant breeze that just wafts by and opens you up.
I don't see it in physical way, but this fragrance and vibration, kind of very subtle feeling.
It's a subtle feeling, kind of subtle fragrance and vibration. Thank you. Thank you. Wow, God is... Yes, okay, one more, come please. This is getting quite interesting, isn't it? All the different varieties in which Baba engages with his children. Hello.
Up until a year ago, I had no idea what love was. So Baba showed me in an image, and I wish I had the humility to tell you how beautiful it was in a meditation, this orb. This blue orb, oval-shaped, just appeared, and it just had the most heavenly, beautiful membrane around it, the feeling around it, and had a little something moving inside of it. And it was totally immortal and ancient. And anything that I had called love before was just like... There's no way to even say it was even a bad joke at best. This was so beautiful, Baba's love. And it's there for all of us. However it shows up, we hear about Baba's love from our seniors, but whoa, this is so beautiful what we're being given.
Thank you. It is. I think the right word for it is whoa. Or, wow, you know. It's amazing when you think about this energy that doesn't have a body of its own and yet has such an incredible ability to morph and be what is needed for the child. I don't think a human parent can even do that. Yeah? And this is something many years ago in a little chit-chat with Daddy Gulzar, she said, this is Baba's speciality. He can be whatever you want him to be. You know, and so when you learn to kind of play with that energy and tune into it, it's magical. It's magical what surfaces. Now, one of the things that I often get asked a lot is, how do we remain subtle? Yeah, we live in a world that demands a lot of attention, a lot of words, a lot of activity, and yet yoga is a subtle process. And one of the things, as you were speaking, I started to become aware of, is that at this time in the confluence, Baba's energies are very present. And energy and vibration tends to get translated in a couple of different ways. One, it's either through a deep feeling, You know, you'll just feel a fragrance, you'll feel something coming in. Or, as an image, you'll see something, you know, that transmits something to you. So, you can have one or another, or you can have both. Just because you don't see a blinding flash of white light doesn't mean you can't feel Baba. But one of the most important things in my journey that I've come to understand is that the big I is a very important I. Can you guess what this I is for? As a preparation for yoga and remembrance? What do you think this I represents? Sorry for those who are non-English, because this is an English word. Who said that? Ah, who's that? Is that Maggie? Hello, Maggie. Okay, so it's introversion. Yeah? Have you ever started to have yoga when you're in an extrovert state? It's just impossible. And we have so many sanskars of extroversion that to be able to sit in yoga, especially sit down in yoga for longer than 20 minutes, is very difficult without being distracted by external stimuli. And the thing about introversion, it's an attitude. It's not a state of being. There's a difference. Right? So imagine, for example, you know how a mother, well, she has a little baby in her arms. And what does she do with the baby? She'll walk with the baby. She'll cook with one hand and have the baby in the other hand. She will read with one hand to have the baby in the other hand. So she's got this ability to kind of stay in tune with this baby whilst doing everything. You know, she won't just start cooking and then go, whoop, I dropped the baby. Oh dear, I forgot about the baby. So this ability to be introvert, we actually have. It's this ability to stay with yourself whilst doing everything. So it's really an attitude. It's an inward looking process. It's not a state where I go in and I just stay in and I don't engage. That's one thing I want to mention about introversion, because there's so many different, I suppose, misunderstandings about this. Would I say it's what? It is a form of tuning in. But it's also, in Baba's dictionary, when Baba's talked about it, Baba's talked about it as holding a thought or a feeling for a period of time. You know what happens when we get into everyday activity? We start thinking about the things that we have to do. So if I'm talking to you, I think about you. I talk about that, I have to think about you. But the moment I step back in, I'm holding a particular pose whilst I'm talking to you. So I'm not letting myself go in the conversation. Does that make sense? And I think that's very, very important practice. Is it always to remain aware of that part of yourself that's precious and not lose that when you're having a conversation with someone else. Because that's when that starts to go, you create some scars of extroversion. And that's exactly then what makes you feel bored in yoga. Who experiences boredom in yoga here? You can be honest. Yes, I mean, you get bored, you kind of sit down, you don't know what to do, so you look up, down, everywhere, and just sit there, hoping something will happen. Yeah? So, introversion is a very necessary energy or practice to cultivate. Now, what I'd like to do is just go through some, there's lots of words around the subject of remembrance and yoga that get battered around. So what is yoga? What is remembrance? What is the bodiless stage? What is the incorporeal stage? What is detached observer? Oh, lots of words. But what is it? Would you like to know? Yeah, so I'm just going to run you through a few things quickly. First, I want to take up the subject of yaad. In Hindi, the word for remembrance is yaad. It's a very nice word. Yeah. And yad is invocation. You know, the other night Sister Mohini spoke about invoking Baba. Yeah? You remember a relationship. Because when you remember something, you create an awareness. Yeah? Now, the beautiful thing about remembrance is that we are eternally connected to Baba. And it's only at this time in the cycle that we are remembering that relationship again. It's not a new relationship. We are remembering an eternal relationship. And that's why earlier when I asked you, remember, right? You will have experienced Baba as a mother, a father, a friend, a partner, a healer, whatever form he takes. But you're remembering a relationship. And it's creating bhavna, a pure feeling inside you. That's what remembrance does. It creates a pure feeling where you can completely devote yourself to that person that you have a feeling for. Does that make sense? Yeah? That's why remembrance brings up memories. It's very important. It creates pure feeling. And within this is also knowledge, because you can remember a number of different things. You know, Baba says, if you remember the cycle, it's a form of remembrance. You remember your home, it's a form of remembrance. You remember and contemplate on points of knowledge, that's a form of remembrance. Because the whole game is about switching awareness. And the reason we get brainwashed with the Murli every single day, I mean literally brainwashed, is because Baba's flushing out our awareness. Right? He's taking you out from your limited little awareness of, I come from here, I belong to this person, that person, into, you are the master of the world and you belong to me. Sometimes we can make that shift if we're alert, other times we can't. We just fall asleep in Murli. Right? But the whole purpose of Murli is to help us to remember. And so your relationship with remembrance has a deep connection with your relationship with Murli. Yeah. You can't do one without the other, unfortunately. Is that okay so far? I'm just going to go step by step here, okay? Second, the word yoga gets used, as it gets used yoga. Yoga literally is a connection. It's an active linking. Okay, now you know this word. It's an active linking. But what it actually is, when you're having yoga, you're concentrating your energies. Your energies are not dispersing. Now, we're going to go through different stages of yoga and do a little bit of practice in between so you understand what concentration of yoga is. A lot of Brahmins find yoga difficult because they don't understand the first basis of concentration of energy. Yeah, it's what it requires. To be able to link, I have to bring my energies in. So, when you concentrate your energies, you can then adopt any form you want. You can be detached one minute, loving the next. Because a big part of yoga is letting go of what you don't need and being what you are. Is that clear so far as a difference between remembrance and yoga? Yeah, and then, you know, this is, it's yoga that brings the transformation of sanskars. Many times for Brahmins, I can't believe how many times I must have heard it. Oh, well, we have lots and lots of yoga, we have lots and lots of remembrance, but why don't we change? Why aren't we changing? We have great gyan, and yet, are you the same that you were 20 years ago, 15 years ago, 1 year ago? How much change has happened? It's a big question, right? That's why we may be remembering nice things, but we're not really having yoga. Then you have the last stage that we call meditation, which we teach to newcomers, which is really, you know, you can meditate on anything. It's just simply the practice of giving attention to something with good feelings. So I can meditate on the sun and think of the qualities of the sun. I can meditate on nature, think of the qualities of nature. And this is about the first steps that we take new people into when we teach them the course, right? So I just wanted to make these three distinctions very clearly for you. Is that clear? Any questions so far? Yes. Don't worry about it. You will have a copy of this at the end. Yeah. Yes. Remembrance is what we're able to remember from the cycle. Yes? Yes. Yes, we tried by ourselves, but we could never remember ourselves. It's not from us up. So what's your question? Okay, so there are two things. Good point. Egidi is saying that, you know, there's one aspect of remembrance where we've been trying in bhakti to remember, but we haven't been able to remember. But there's something about coming at a particular point in time when something comes on. So time is a factor, but Baba and knowledge is also another factor. Without the Murli, you can never remember who you are. You can't. And that's where the mirror of remembrance begins. When you listen to that Murli every day, and he's someone, this energy that's floating around as a fragrance, or as a missing piece, or as a construction light, he's shedding light on things. He's waking things up, and you're listening to it. And even if the whole Murli didn't make sense, but just the last two lines of the Murli did something in the soul, it woke you up. It woke something up. I mean, think about it, right? 63 births. We've got some pretty stone intellects by the end of 63 births. Right? We come to Baba in a pretty, I would say, we've still got good lives at the end of the cycle, but, you know, we've got a lot of work to do to remember again. It's a re-emergence process. That's right. Yeah, it's an awakening process. Yeah. Okay, now, yes. The difference between Manman above and Buddhi Yoga. Okay, good question. Manman above literally means link your mind with mine, but it's the state when you're absorbed in having a relationship with Baba. So you know how somebody was sitting and says, Baba's my cup of tea. And I'm just feeling this closeness to Baba. So your mind is absorbed in the feelings you're having in the relationship with this person. Right? Buddhi yoga, because yoga is a faculty of the intellect. It's the exercise of the intellect. Yoga is not a state. Do you know what a state is? It's just, it's not a noun. It's not something you sit down and you become. It's a practice. It's an exercise, like building muscle. Now, all the different stages Baba talks about in yoga, they're more or less, you know, like a whole exercise for the soul. But just like with the human body, you've got kind of different muscles that need activation, right? So you can have 10 different exercises just for the arm. You do this, or you do this. But each exercise will activate something different, a different muscle in the body. In the same way in the soul, yoga is the practice of concentrating my energy so I can sit on my seat. Yeah. One is to be absorbed in love for Baba, and that's very healing. That energy and the relationship of that energy heals emotional wounds. It liberates us from emotional dependencies. But the path of Raj Yoga is a path of self-mastery. And the aim is to become completely self-conscious, right? Claim my kingdom fully. And the practice of yoga is necessary for that. Is that clear? That's what brings transformation. So there is an aspect of Baba's energies that are very, very loving. But my own personal practice of concentration is what then brings me victory over my not so perfect parts in my kingdom. So there's two sides. Baba's not just there for healing. Ultimately, whatever Baba gives the soul makes the soul into a deity. And what is a deity? A royal buddhu. That's in Hindi, right? So a buddhu means a fool, like an innocent one. Has no knowledge, no awareness, nothing. They're just royal puppets. Right? It's quite amazing actually when you think about it. I mean, it's a radical transformation. From where we are now, we analyze every little bit to being a royal puppet that knows nothing. So there's a lot of work to do to unlearn everything. Right? I found this very lovely definition, and I like it because I feel it's very important in Brahmin life when we think of this word follow. It gets battered around a lot. Follow the Father. What does that mean? And, you know, Baba described it in very simple terms. He called it, when you follow the Father, Shiv Baba, that's the stage of being without a body, bodiless and incorporeal. When you're following Dada, that's Brahma, that's the angelic stage, the avyak stage. When you're doing both, you're following Bab Dada. So it's a stage and an awareness that's different from your everyday awareness. And the last thing is that the stages below this is the awareness of people and things. And what Baba says is don't drop into that stage. You know, we come to Baba and we have so many people in our worlds. We have so many connections and relations and dependencies in our world. And we come to Baba and Baba slowly, child, he gives us love. Remember me, he gives us a home. You know that the relationships of father, teacher, Satguru are very physically practical at this time in Sangam Yuga. They're not just theoretical. Whose home are you sitting in right now? You're sitting in your father's home. What are you being fed by? Brahma Bhojan, right? You're being taken everywhere. You're being given. It's a very, very practical sustenance that we're receiving right now. It's not theoretical. And so, you know, all of that is designed so that it can help us stay in an elevated awareness. Now, what stage do you think that is? You need to shout out loudly. Sorry? Seedling stage. Yeah, Baba talks a lot about this stage. You know, over the last, since 1969, when Baba's spoken Muralis, I've watched the progression of Baba describing each of the different stages at different times. And the last stages of yoga, up until a few years ago, Baba kept talking a lot about volcanic stages of yoga, light and might of yoga, right? So I'm going to take these stages in order. So this is a seed stage. They call it the highest stage in yoga. There are levels. Okay? And this very simply is what it says. It's seed awareness. So this is, it's the act of, in a moment, disappearing from the expansion back to the essence. It's a disappearing act. It's the awareness of myself as a seed, as a point. And in this point, it's not an empty stage. It's a stage of fullness. You know, where you experience the fullness of what you are. And it's in this stage, when you have this kind of yoga, that you have transformation of sanskaras. This is probably the weakest for many, many Brahmins. Many Brahmins. Because in this stage, literally, as you come back to the seed, you merge, you practice merging sanskaras. And until a sanskara is merged, the energy around it can't change. Is what do we do all the time? We think, we speak. And as we think and we speak, we keep using that sanskara, using that sanskara. And then we have heart-to-heart chit-chats with Baba, we have this, loving conversations with Baba. Great, that's another stage, but lower down. It's not the stage that transforms. Is that clear? So I want to read you something from Baba, because I have a few extracts from Baba's Muralis for each of these stages. And whilst you're listening to it, allow yourself to go into that experience. Is that okay? So I'm just going to ask you to sit upright wherever you are. The Bhagavad says, the more you stay in the awareness of the point, the greater will be the change visible in your sanskaras. At the time of talking and eating, Baba seemed to disappear from the body for a second or two. Even whilst talking to someone, he would see the bodiless form, the soul. Expansion is merged within the seed. And so the awareness of the point means the awareness of the seed stage. Everything is merged in the seed. And when the seed is sown in the earth, it all emerges. In the same way, all knowledge is merged in the awareness of the point. It emerges when you come down. When you have the awareness of the point, your stage remains full. You're starting to feel it a little. Yeah? Remember, this is a subtle practice. So you need to give this attention. When you sit at Amrit Vela, let your energies concentrate and become aware of yourself as the point. It'll take a few seconds in the beginning, but the moment you become the seed, there's a different energy that takes over. You're not pulled by anything. There's freedom. Now, incorporeal. We hear this word a lot, right? This very simply means the stage of nirvana. It's the awareness of the home, the silence of the home, whilst we come into action. You will notice that with every one of these stages of yoga, they are integrated with action. Because the proof of a yogi life, ultimately, is a karma yogi life. Yeah. Before I go on to the incorporeal, I want to make a distinction here. Because sometimes, instead of buddhi yoga, we have mind yoga. Right? So we overuse our minds in yoga. How? How do you overuse your mind in yoga? You what? You have questions, perhaps, yeah? Expectations in yoga, though. You use language. Yeah, you rely too much on thoughts. You notice that? Thoughts are a secondary function. The primary energy of the soul is a feeling. And so when you find yourself relying on too many thoughts, it's like giving injection to a weak person, you know, putting them on a drip, but then when you take the drip off, they're weak again. Does that make sense? Because too many thoughts drain the energy of the mind. You know, sometimes when I hear some meditation commentaries, they're just so long and so long and so long and so lectures. And who am I in all of that? Where does the chance have to be in all of that? You know, I remember Anthony giving this beautiful example of sports. Do you know pole vaulting? The sport where you hold a pole and you run with it, and then it hits the ground and you jump. It's called pole vaulting. So he says, you know, we start running with this pole of our thoughts, run. And then when it's time to hit the ground and we elevate, you have to let the pole go to get to the other side. But we still hold on to the pole, so we fall back. So this is why for most of us, you know, our meditation is just thinking circles or circles of imagination. And I want to make the distinction between imagination and visualization here. Visualization is a function of the intellect. You will visualize something, or it will be a natural visualization that comes when you've understood something. It's like you'll just see it. Right? Imagination is an artificial product that's created from the mind. Does that make sense? So for example, we can imagine traveling here, out of here, going up above, beyond the sun, the moon, the stars, up above, hanging in the soul world and then coming back down. That's like watching a really nice movie. It feels good when you watch a movie, but you can't hold a stage. Does that make sense? It's different to yoga. So, yoga doesn't require too many thoughts. It requires the ability to concentrate my energies. And so the first is the seed. The second is incorporeal awareness, where I'm aware of the silence of my home. I'm aware of being a resident of that home whilst I am here engaging with you. Nirvana literally means beyond sound. And so whilst the seed stage is the stage where you experience your own fullness, essence, the incorporeal stage, you experience your original silence. And you take the support of that silence in action. Does that make sense? Yeah, it's a very beautiful practice, coming into sound whilst being aware of being. And it's in this state that all negative thoughts finish. Because it's your intellect that travels. In a second, your intellect can be aware, where do I come from? And you can immediately feel it. Just do this for a moment. I'm going to ask you a question. Where do I come from? Where do I come from? Holding that awareness, you come into sound. Silent awareness in action, and this is your eternal form. So, I'm going to read you another short extract from Baba. Baba comes to take us to nirvana. The nirvana stage is the incorporeal stage. It is the stage of being free of negative thoughts. Whilst walking and moving around and carrying out any task, check whether the incorporeal is carrying out the task with the support of the corporeal. Then you will automatically have a stage free from negativity. If you keep your real incorporeal form in your awareness, the virtues and powers will automatically emerge. Bodiless. We hear this word a lot, don't we? Before I go on to this, any questions? Is it clear so far? Yes? No? You can shake your heads? Yes? Okay. All right. So bodiless. And I've got two pictures here. What do you understand from these pictures? One is before and the other is after. What feeling do you get for the bodiless stage from these pictures? Huh? Lightness, yes, definitely. Somebody's holding us, yeah. Right, so on one side, one's in control, one's not in control. Right. Yeah. Or you could say one wants control and is pulling the strings, and the other has let go of control and is allowing himself to be used like a puppet. Could you say that? Yeah? So when Baba talks about this stage, he describes it as from Karanhar, the one who does everything and wants to do everything, right? And be in charge of everything. So all the different eyes come into place, to being Karavanhar. Right? Karavanhar means the soul inspires the body to do things. Whereas Karanhar means I am the body and I have to do things. So one is the very much this feeling of a strong I have to do something. And the other is I'm allowing something to happen. They're two very different positions. And the bodiless stage is very important in everyday activity. I remember a time when, you know, there was a lot of service in London. I mean, London is an ocean of service in so many ways. And I remember coming to Daddy one day and saying to her, Daddy, you know, this has been my timetable. I haven't stopped for a minute from 3:30 this morning to 11 o'clock at night. Now, how do I have yoga in all of this? And Daddy gave me a beautiful yukti. She said, before you start something and after you finish something, become bodiless. Which means let go. Allow something to happen through you. So in this stage, we're struggling with different eyes as we come into action. Right? There may be some waste thoughts here. And so the bodiless stage is the practice of shedding to allow the energy of the soul and Baba's energy to do its work. So you literally become a puppet. And, you know, Baba often talks about it. The easy method is love. Sister Mahini talked about it in her class the other day. She said, don't start with, I am a peaceful soul. Because there'll be a little voice that pops up and that says, no, you're not. Right? Don't start with, I am a pure soul, because there'll be another little voice that says, no, you're not. But start with Baba's qualities. So start with, well, Baba is the ocean of peace. And I am a drop of that peace. That will immediately make you let go. Right? You have to, yoga starts from here, out. Yeah, it doesn't go from here, up, there. It goes from there, here, there. It's synchronicity. And it's integrating. And the moment you practice bodilessness throughout the day, you just let go, drop the limited eye, and just allow Baba's love, allow something to flow. There's a massive synchronicity that starts around you. I remember there was a group in front of Daddy Ratan Mohini, and she was asking them a question. She says, tell me, what's the easiest method to become free from waste thoughts? What's the easiest method to become free from waste thoughts? Have any of you got a good method to become free from waste thoughts? Who successfully conquered waste thoughts here? Can you raise your hand if you have? Can you tell us your method? So she was probing the class like this. So everybody was like, no. You know, they were giving answers like, well, love Baba more. You know, put a full stop. And she says, yeah, okay, can you put a full stop? And they go, no. Okay, so give me a method that works. And she said, the method that works for her is the method of just starting to sing Baba's praise. You've got to start activating everything you know about Baba. You know, Baba in the Muralis has not just given us knowledge and facts, but he's given us his own introduction. He's telling us about who he is. There is a book, if you ever get it, it's brilliant. It's called Satyam Shivam Sundaram. It's in the bookshop, and it has all the titles of Baba's titles from Baba's Muralis, extracts. And when you start playing and thinking about who God is and each of his titles, immediately you step out of a self, how do you call it, a selfish space into a benevolent space. So for example, you know, let's say I'm feeling down. I'm having waste thoughts about myself. I'm not good. I feel a bit disheartened. In that stage, I can't become bodiless because I'm experiencing a bit of heaviness. But in that moment, when I start thinking about, I stretch my intellect outside myself to Baba. Okay, who is Baba? Baba's an ocean of peace. Baba is, he's such an ocean of peace and tranquility. You know, Baba's standing in front and giving me a garland of hugs. Baba's the comforter of hearts. You just start, just a few words like that and you'll start to see your mind changing. Can you feel the difference? That's what it does. You start taking your track away from being self-centered to more benevolent thinking. Yeah. So the bodiless stage requires a bit more active work, because to practice the bodiless stage, you've got to let things go. Let go of waste, let go of a limited I. In the now, just drop it. I always have a slogan for myself: stop it and drop it. This is for me the bodiless stage. Stop and drop. That's it. So, what does Baba have to say about the bodiless stage? Practice coming into the body one moment and going beyond the body in the next. You can adopt whatever type of costume you wish, whenever you wish. When there is a need, you adopt the costume. And when there is no need, you become separate from the body. As soon as you finish your work, you become detached from your costume. Just as the Father is bodiless and He gives you this experience whilst being in a body, in the same way, whilst living your life, remain stable in the bodiless stage by being Karavanhar, the one who inspires. Make your body perform action. That body is Karanhar, the one who does. And you, the soul, are Karavanhar, the one who inspires. This is called the bodiless stage. Now drop your costume in 1 second. Now the next one is going to require you to stand up. Could you stand up wherever you are? So wherever you are, just shake your arms and hands out. And just do a little movement that you feel comfortable with. Right? So you can sway your hips, you can stretch up, you can go to one side, you can move your body, but continue that movement continuously, whatever it is. Just keep going. Now I'm going to say stop. Okay, keep going. Keep going. Stretch this guy, continue. Repetitive movement, you can roll your neck. If your neck is not feeling so good, you can roll your hips if they're not feeling so good. Stop. Continue. Yes, yes. Really give yourself a good stretch. Go up, come down. Oh, now we've got some good music. Yes, you can walk up and down if you want. Yes, and stop. You look a sight. Okay, keep going. Once more. great. You can move around in circles if you want. Yes, wave to each other. And stop. You can sit down now. Definitely have the certificate of having mastered the full stop here. Right? Okay, so now that was physical. And that was pretty easy. Right? Physical, it's in your control, you can stop. Now we're going to do something else. I'm going to ask you to talk out loud, so everybody will be talking out loud at the same time. You don't need to listen to what your next door neighbor is saying. You just need to focus on what you have to say. Is that clear? Okay? So I'm going to ask you to talk about something you don't like. Okay, so just think about what is it you don't like? Just think about it for a moment. And when I say go, and I want you to start talking at normal pitch. You know, so if I speak like this, then speak like this, not speak loudly and just keep speaking, but don't listen to what your neighbor is saying. Is that okay? So this is a private conversation in public. Okay? So, are you ready? Do you have something that you don't like that you can talk about? Yeah? Anything. It could be a banana, it could be a pear, it could be papaya, it could be a dog. Whatever you want. Okay? Go. Keep going. Say anything. Just keep talking. Yeah. Stop. Has the traffic of your thoughts stopped? Okay, now talk about something that you like. Okay, so think about something you like and really go for it. Go. You've got to talk. Stop. Okay. Did you notice a difference between the two times that you spoke? What was the difference? Sorry, one was what? One was letting it out. The other one was filling yourself. Did you notice a difference in the energies when you were speaking? So the first time you spoke, it was quite harsh. You were quite loud, right? In your tone, I could hear it. And you were quite engaged. The second time you were speaking, when you spoke about something you liked, you were much softer and much more docile. Yeah? And so it's easier to stop. When you're thinking thoughts that are elevated, good, positive, it's easier to stop the traffic because they're much slower. They're softer. When we're thinking about things we don't like, they're very difficult to stop. You know, so it's like the train just keeps running by itself. And it's as simple as that, really. And if there is one practice that the eight have mastered, it is this practice, the full stop. This is what Baba says. This is the qualification required to become part of the eight. You have to learn to apply the full stop. And Baba just uses two words, not and dot. I'm not going there, full stop. We always, all of us, have some space. when before a track of thinking begins, waste or negative or whatever it is, you have just a little bit of space to say no or say yes. Now, how you choose to use that space is up to you. Because we all know, we've experienced times when we feed a track of thinking and we know it's not real, but we can't help ourselves. Because once you've gone down that track, you have to keep sustaining it, right? It gets harder to stop it. It's like, do you remember the first time you told a lie? Do you remember the first time you told a lie? Yes, no, okay. Well, you know, when you told a lie the first time, what happened physiologically? Your heart started beating a bit, right? Okay, then you had a thought, I've got two options here. Either I tell the truth and free myself, or I tell another lie to cover up that lie. So which option did you choose? The second one. So you tell another lie to cover up that lie. Then it gets harder to tell the truth, right? Because then you have to uncover two lies, and then three lies, and then four lies, and eventually, you know what? What the hell? The lie becomes the truth. Eventually you've lied to yourself so many, many times that you've actually started to believe the lie that you've been repeating to yourself. And you end up living a lie. And you start feeling very far away from yourself and you don't know why. Does that sound familiar? Yeah? So, very important, the full stop. So that you don't create separation from your real self. This is a practice. And Baba very simply says for this practice, when you carry out any task, or when you are talking, you must also stop the traffic of your thoughts. And this you can do any time of the day. In a conversation with someone, you're performing a task, stop. Stop. It's like strengthening the brake of a car. We are so used to driving fast that the brakes aren't strong, so we go straight into something. Oh, well, I didn't mean that, but it just came out. Right? It means the brake is weak. Okay? Yes. Yes. All thoughts. Stopping traffic. Because it's building a brake. It's the muscle of the brake. Okay. Guess what stage this is? Guess what stage this is? Aww. What stage is this? She's pure, she's joyful, she's happy. It's the angelic stage. I deliberately didn't choose an angel. Right? Because the avyakt stage is the stage of experiencing your virtues. Your qualities of the soul. And not just peace. Huh? It's all the qualities in the soul. Joy. Bliss. Happiness. Whatever quality, purity you want to experience. It's the time to contemplate and draw out that quality. And it creates a vibration. You know, you become an image of virtue. That's what an angel is at the end of the day. Avyakta. Yeah? So one is to just practice being light. So seeing light, visualizing light. It's nice. It's a bit of an imaginative process, a little bit. But another thing is actually taking your playing with your virtues. You know, sitting peacefully, contemplating on the peace inside the soul. The purity, the pure energy that the soul is. The deep joy and happiness that I experience now. So the avyakt stage is the experience of these special virtues and qualities. It's quite an active stage. You know, many times Baba's often said that at Amrit Vela, you should take a title of self-respect. This helps to create the avyakt stage. Because when you start the day with a virtue or a quality or a particular title, your face reflects that throughout the day. That's why people feel, oh, this is an angel. You don't have to have done anything, but you bring the fragrance of a virtue into an interaction. The avyakt stage is not an imaginative exercise. Yeah, it's not about seeing a body of light and stepping into it. It's a much deeper process of connecting your thoughts with your original virtue and allowing the energy of that virtue become the light that you are. Does that make sense? And this is also in this stage, you can have a heart-to-heart conversation with Baba. Yeah? It's like a loving chit-chat with Baba. It's a very, very sweet stage. And the last one. What stage do you think this is? What stage do you think this is? What stage do you think this is not? What are they doing? Right, they're surprised. They're watching a movie and they're surprised, right? So, this stage is the detached observer. Okay, so that's what you don't do. But that's what we do in the drama all the time. Right? Something happens. Something else happens. Why did that happen? You know, it's like we engage with the scenes of the drama more than is necessary. So we look like that most of the time. Yeah. So instead of Bhat-Dada being revealed through our faces, the world gets to see our open mouths. Right? So the detached observer requires full faith that every scene in the drama is accurate. And in this stage, you're not just detached, you're in the scene, but you're with Baba. That's why in Hindi the two words go together. Sakshi means detached observer, and Sati means companion. So the detached observer, you are with Baba whilst engaging with the drama. That's what it literally means. Sister Mohini shared very beautifully the other day. She says, when you're talking to anybody, don't talk to somebody alone. Bring Baba with you. And so this is engagement in the drama with Baba. And when you start with Baba, there's a very natural space that gets created. Because she was saying, this person that she's talking to, when she is with Baba, Baba's listening to that person. That person's talking to Baba, not to her. And it's a very, very lovely practice to be able to stay detached. Very, very necessary. Does that make sense? Yeah, it's very much in the drama, here and now, but experiencing the companionship of Baba. You're a special actor, and no tension. It means you don't let yourself get upset by any scene of the drama. So you don't experience tension. The moment you're experiencing tension in a scene of the drama, understand you're not being a detached observer. Baba's not there with you. So very, very simple stages these are. Is that okay? Has that been helpful? Yeah? Has it given you a map? Now, look. We have to practice yoga and become accomplished in these stages. It takes time. But if you can't do one stage, catch hold of another stage. Right? So, if you're in the drama and you can't do the point stage, do the detached observer stage. Right? If you can't apply the full stop in that moment, do the avyak stage. Think about a quality. See a quality and start thinking about it. Become it. Right? You can catch any stage you want. As long as you're keeping your intellect engaged, that's the main thing. Does that make sense? So, you know, at different times during the day, you'll be in a different space. Amrit Vela in the morning is good time for seed stage. Point. Throughout the day. The bodiless stage, it lets you take off the costume, put on the costume. Take off the costume, put on the costume. Right? I mean, imagine how strong you become when you practice yoga. Because you're building muscle. And when you become strong, then the king can sit on his seat without being pushed off by one of the vices. Anger, greed, attachment. The king needs strength to stay still. That's what yoga does. Okay. Now very quickly, because we've only got 10 minutes left, I want to take you through something. Sin. Sin, S-I-N. This is an English word. Okay? That's what it means. To miss the mark. You know, it's very interesting how this word in our dictionary in Old English has meant to be the one who is guilty. So whenever we hear the word sin in the Muralis, I'm guilty. Right? And Baba goes, no, you're a master of the world. I'm guilty. No, you're not. You're my beloved child. I'm guilty. Right? Because we have that recording. Because of the cultures we've come from. And yet, very interesting that in the etymology of sin, so the roots of the word sin, they go back to the Aramaic, the ancient Hebrew cultures, Greek also, and it literally means to miss. Yeah, to miss something. So it was, I'm going to read you something that I really like. In the Aramaic language and culture that Jesus taught in, this is in those times, because remember this language is after the Copper Age. The terms for sin and evil were archery terms. When the archer shot at the target and missed, the scorekeeper yelled the Aramaic word for sin. It meant that you were off the mark. Take another shot. The concept of sin was to be positive mental feedback. Sin is when you are operating from inaccurate information and thus a perceptual mistake. Now you took a shot and you missed it. It's a mistake. When you become conscious and aware of the results of your inaccuracy, you have the option to reconsider what you have learned. And, as they say in Hollywood, you can do another take. So, that's a very different understanding of sin, isn't it? It's more a verb rather than a noun. I am guilty. I've just missed the mark. Now I have to take another shot. Does that make sense? I know this word has created a lot of mire for many people in the family, because what we hold in our consciousness is the aspect of I am guilty, which is just another one of those body conscious eyes. In Hindi, the word pap is derived from a Sanskrit word, papa, doesn't mean father, but it means to fall. To fall from a moral, spiritual, human position. That's what it means. Right? So for example, when you told a lie, you fell. You know, your action did something that went against the truth. You fell away from a position of truth. You fall from a position. But that doesn't mean you can't get back up and try again. That's why in English we have so many different words like mistake, misbehavior, misunderstanding. Because they're all rooted in the original etymology of this word sin. Now, yes, there is the aspect of sin when you break laws, right? So, for example, you know, Baba talks about taking your own life. Committing suicide is a sin. Because that is going against the human law of life. Right? Life is meant to be lived. I stop it and cut it and commit suicide. That's a sin because it's a transgression of the law. So those are pretty obvious at this end of the scale. Right? But the more subtle ones are more like you're just off the mark with things. And so Baba categorizes sin as light and heavy as well. Now, I had a piece on this, but I don't think we've got enough time for that because we've got about 5 or 10 minutes left. But I'm going to leave this as a bit of homework for you. When you've got some time and space, let's just make a list. It's actually very, very helpful. Make a list of light sins and make a list of heavy sins. Because sometimes in a day, one of the things we don't really see is how much subtle sin we actually do. Right? Even to have a bad vision for someone, Baba has said, is a sin. Because you're going against a natural spiritual law. And now, because nowadays when the machinery of karma is speeding up, you will feel the effect of a sin. Because the immediate repercussion of a sin is that it locks your intellect and you experience pain. Some form of pain or discomfort in that moment. Yeah? And then it will take you time to figure it out. And that's why Baba, when he says to us, pay attention. You know, he's asking us to be present. When he says, remember me, remember me, remember, why does he say that? Because he's basically saying, don't miss being in the moment. Because if you miss being in the moment, you will make a mistake that you will then have to repent for. And then it takes you time. Why am I feeling like this? Imagine how many subtle sins in a day. You know, sometimes Baba would say, even to take something from the center without asking is a sin. Because you've left behind a vibration that others will follow. Right? So when one does that, two does that, three does that, four does that, imagine the consequences. Baba's even talked about things like, for example, when you're surrendered to Baba. You've said, Baba, my mind, my body, my wealth is yours, that you cannot give even one penny away to anybody else. That's why we have the system. You can't give money to an alcoholic. Right? Because anything you've surrendered to the Father is for the Father's task. And if you give it to an unworthy person and you don't know how it's being used, guess what happens? There are karmic consequences to that. So our relationship with sin has to change. Because where yoga is a concentration of energy and alertness, a stopping, a letting go, a becoming, sin is exactly the opposite. It's a dispersion. I've missed the point. I've missed the mark. I don't quite understand something. So I've acted out of ignorance. That's why knowledge is so, so important for us as Brahmins. Because it creates a context for us in which we can be responsible for everything we create. From our thoughts, to our words, to our actions. And take full responsibility of it. Whatever you've walked yourself into, you can walk yourself out of. It just requires a change and some practice. And the good thing is Baba's given us a guarantee, which is fantastic. He says, if you remember me, what will happen? Your sins are absolved. That's incredible. That's just an absolutely amazing guarantee. No human being can give you this guarantee. Sometimes we don't know how the energy of our previous sins affects us right now. Have you ever felt compelled? Have you ever felt obliged? Have you ever felt dependent? Have you ever felt helpless? These are energies of the burden of previous sins. And all of us are carrying a burden to a certain extent. And yet Baba's giving us such an easy route that when you practice yoga and give me attention, bring your mind to me, connect with me, then your sins will be absolved, the burden will be shed. And I think it's a very important part of the chanting process. I remember in the early days when it was compulsory to write the chant. One of the questions at the end of the day was, what good things have I done, but what sins have I performed? Because when you make yourself accountable to yourself, you close the gap. If I told a lie today, and at the end of the day, I've checked my chart, and I've realized I've told a lie, then in that moment, I have the opportunity to correct myself. If I don't have a chart, then, okay, I don't even know I've lied, and I continue the next day to tell another lie. It doesn't matter. And another one, and another one, and another one. And then eventually, it just gets too much. Too much to undo. And so what Baba's inviting us into is to be with him. To spend the confluence age looking out through Baba's eyes, thinking Baba's thoughts, speaking Baba's words, playing with Baba, eating with Baba, so that we can stay safe from our own stuff. Yeah? As well. So I want to stop there. Are you okay? That wasn't too heavy for you, was it? No? You're not scared, are you? No? No. Okay. Yeah, thank you. No. These are Baba's words. Baba gives us this clarity. Okay. Now, does anybody have a burning question? If not, we're going to stop here for some yoga to finish. Well, that's good. Nobody has a question? No? Well, that's really good. Well done. So you're Raj Yogis from now on, correct? Yeah? Okay. So let's sit for a few moments, and I'm going to take you through the yoga that I learned from one of the daddies when I was young. They gave me 4 questions. I had to have a dialogue, not a mental thinking dialogue, but I had to hold these questions in my mind, let my energies concentrate, and I had to do this whole process 3 times. So I'm going to repeat these questions for you. They're very simple. Who am I? Who do I belong to? Where do I come from? And why am I here? That's it. No other commentary. The rest, your intellect is going to do very naturally. It's going to exercise. Is that okay? Okay, so sit upright. And just take a couple of deep breaths in through your stomach. Fill your stomach and chest. And just breathe out. And allow the body to become peaceful. Where do I come from? Why am I here? Where do I come from? Belong.
Where do I come from?